Welcome to The Inspired Culture. I'm Eric Himes, and today we're exploring how to bring humanity back into business operations. Many organizations feel their processes are rigid, robotic, and lifeless, and that's not how people thrive. Joining us is Daryl Steed, founder of Smart Wolf Consulting, with over 15 years of experience helping dealerships optimize operations, refine inventory strategies, and improve sales and marketing. Daryl is known for his honest, results-driven approach, helping businesses boost efficiency while keeping people at the center. Daryl, it's great to have you here. Let's start by talking about why so many processes feel cold and robotic and how leaders can reconnect with the human side of their business.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure to be here. Really excited about this topic because it's really focused on people. And I think it really comes back to everyone's always looking for the easy button, or they're looking for to do it cheaper. Mm. And so they immediately go to this construct of that everybody's replaceable, which we could argue for hours on, are they, are they not? But when we have that mentality, we don't pour in to developing our people to have the confidence or the drive or the understanding to be successful. And when we do that, that's what takes away that empathetic or genuine connection that most people want to deal with. I just was reading, I can't remember if it was a Bloomberg or if it was a Times article, but with AI making this big push, over 75% of people said that they still rather deal with a person over any type of AI technology because we seek to connect. So, and that's where I really like to focus, is giving these what used to be kind of an easy skill now is an art of communication, eye-to-eye contact, hell, even shaking hands, to where people have that confidence where I want them to feel they belong and that we need them, not that like they're just a commodity to us.
I love that you say that. You know, I believe the same thing. I believe nothing happens without people. I have not ever seen yet a product walk in off the street somewhere or walk in someplace and say, buy me, and here's all of the benefits of doing so. You know, there's nothing that happens without people. And I think they're the most undervalued where they should be the highest valued, from my perspective. And so it sounds like we're going to learn a little bit more about that from your perspective, Daryl.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny when you say that making them, so with my core, my mission statement would be people, process, and then profits, right? Profits come last. But not in the way people think. I think when you pour into your people, profits are inevitable. Mm-hmm. Because I was just with a client actually this morning. They're an East Coast client, so there's a time difference from West Coast. And I'm talking to them, and they mentioned this. And I said, hey, guys, I'm about to be on the show about culture and people. And think about this, is if your people bragged and talked and were excited about what they did in social media, everywhere they go, how many people would want to do business with you? And they said, well, we think that's happening. So we went through each person's social media and and no one could tell what these people did. No one would know what they did. And so it was really a big difference of understanding. If people aren't talking about what they do and they're not happy about what they do or proud, so to say, do you really think that you're leaving, that you're maximizing your profitability of your brand? And so that's where I really, you know, think that we have the ability to, I don't say we're missing it. I think we have the ability to recapture some of this to get people to really enjoy where they work or to be proud of where they work.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, goes into the lines, you know, from the inspired culture side of things. Are we intrinsically motivated, right? Why do we show up every day? And what is it we're doing? And how does that connect to the greater vision of the organization? I love what you're sharing there, because I think it's often missed and forgotten about, and it becomes a transaction in a way of life to wake up and go to work and come home without any intentionality, without any thought other than I'm going to go do the same thing, without recognizing the impact I'm making and what I'm truly doing, and seeing all the connection points along the way.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot to be said about that, right? Is, you know, we immediately want to, and I want to use this word very lightly, is attack people and say, well, they're not motivated. You know, we go to, it's always them, it's never us, right? And I think it starts in the culture of, it's always you, it's never them. Because if someone looks at their job as a job, so I classify it as a job and a career, right? If a job's something you're doing till you're finding something you want to do, I get it. You're young, you're 17, you're working at In-N-Out. I don't know if someone's making that a career. If they are, great. But that's a job typically. And then you're like, I'm working towards something, and you make it a career. But if you're not making the surrounding or the culture where someone wants to make it a career, where they want to pour in, be an expert, they want to be part of the solution, well, then it can never be a career for them because you're inspiring a culture of creating a job, not a career path. Not to mention, with most businesses, specifically in the auto industry, I can speak very much about that, but most industries that I see is how many people are asking them and having a plan where you tell them that this is where you see them, that you're giving them a path to a future rather than, hey, man, you need to do this. This is what I need you to do. And it just becomes one of these, you're making it repetitive and non-important. You're not showing them the bigger picture. You're not painting them into the future so they don't believe they actually belong.
Yeah. And belonging is really important, isn't it? And letting them know that they do play a really important role in the work that they do, and letting them know how that can grow and foster into other things. I love what you're saying there. So just one of the questions I have for you is, why do you think so many leaders feel like process and systems drain the humanity out of their organizations instead of supporting it?
Because they want to make them sterile. Mm. They want to make them surgical, which I get it. I was in the military. I'm all for being surgical and efficient. But the moment you take out that unique quality or that kind of unpredictability of people's personality or the personality of it, is it no longer has that warm feeling. It just becomes like a hospital room, right? It's all white. It's sterile. It is, and then people come to work, and that's what you're delivering. You're not delivering the process to engage with customers, you're delivering a process to build components, right? So like in a manufacturer shop, and I'm just going to use this, like, let's say, and because it deals with AI and all these things that are kind of like a robotic shop. Okay, that's going to be manufacturer-based. It's just going to be, you put this piece, you glue this piece, you do, okay, that's going to be robotic. It is the same. But once you involve people, then it's got to be like, okay, are they tired? What's going on with their life? What's this? You need to factor in some things so that they feel that they can come to you and talk to you, and they can put their own little personality involved in this professionally. Obviously, we can't do it unprofessionally, but to where the process still works in allowing people to have color, right? To have that, like, that empowerment of, I'm a little quirky. I'm going to take this process and put a little bit of me into it, right? It doesn't need to be black and white. It can have some colors in the rainbow of, like, what they're doing. And I think that's where people are missing it, is they don't want to become personally involved with their people, like building their careers or knowing them. And so we're trying to make it very almost like anecdotal rather than empathetic and engaging.
Certainly. You know, the anecdotal side of things, putting people in a box, so call it. From my vantage point, everybody's unique. There isn't one person the same as the next. And we all have the capacity to be creative and innovative if we make room in our organizations for that to happen. And I believe that the best is still to come when we create that type of environment, because we're always going to be innovating and seeking out things. But to your point, when we choose to put somebody in a box, we limit their capacity to grow, but we also limit the organization's capacity to grow too. So that's really insightful, Daryl, what you shared there.
Yeah, it's funny you just brought up about putting people in the box. We did a whole, I won't say study, but we did a whole, conversation and a little, 20 group about this and asked why people do that. And what we came up with is it's fear. It's direct fear. We put people in a box because it's easier for us to manage, direct, control, whatever word we need to use in the moment, rather than realizing if you have 100 employees, right, for, you know, a mid-sized company, you have 100 creators, but you have to be strong enough, or you have to be
comfortable.
Comfortable or vulnerable enough to say, I'm okay with these people creating and I'm not worried about my job. And something that, you know, I don't speak a lot about what I do better than most, but there is very few things that I think I do. And one is, I always am okay with, like, if I'm a used car director for a group, or if I'm a GM for a group, I'm okay having a second person in there that's looking to take my job. Why? I'm going to bring them along, and I'm going to bring, because if they take my job, they've either surpassed me or I've done my job to get them to where they need to be, and I'm more than likely moving on to the next step. But we don't have that. We have a complex of fear of, we're always looking over our shoulder rather than do the work and you don't have to look. Right? If you're doing the job, build creators, empower your people, and tell them it, and tell them and show them that it's okay to have a voice. A, like you said, a unique voice. You, not mine. Don't be me. It's hard enough to be me. Be you. And but they need to see that too. It's one thing to say it. They need to see you actually having that unique voice and being your quirky or, you know, goofy self or whatever it may be, so they can say, like, it's okay for me to be me.
100%. The reality is that for us to be confident leaders, to develop and grow people, we have to be vulnerable, deep leaders, right? We have to know ourselves well enough and take the time to figure out our purpose and our passion and where we belong. And when we do that, we already know where our space is. And we should be happy in our space because that's ours. And sometimes we're to go to the top. And other times, this is where we are experts and this is where we belong. All of them are great places and all of them have people that belong in each of those spaces. And it's when we know that deeply, we can give everything else to everyone else for them to have the greatest possibility to have success and hold nothing back because we aren't afraid. Because there's nothing to be afraid of because we know we're in the spot we're supposed to be in. And so we don't have to be fearful of somebody taking my role. No, I'm just here to do the role that I've been given to the very best of my ability because that's my gift. And I'm going to let my gift shine and give it to others.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And in the event that someone's better or it's time for me to find something, like, you just feel blessed for having the opportunity. And when you start looking at it as an opportunity rather than a right or a job or any other word people like to use, is you're changing your mindset, right? You're changing the culture, changing the mindset of, guys, I'm blessed to have an opportunity of being a coach and a consultant for a lot of dealer groups and some other retail strategies that I've now working on. And I'm going to be thankful for every day that I have that. And if they come to an end, then it's on to, you know, it's on to the next challenge or the next opportunity. But, you know, I look at it as a blessing. And then when it happens, I look at it as an opportunity. That doesn't mean that I don't work. It doesn't mean I don't strive. But it's just changing your mindset to, well, I'm better at this job than you. Well, to stay better or stay great, you have to look at it as an opportunity and stay humble, right? And you have to stay open to different ideas. I just got taught something, and I'm a little bit older than the person that taught me by double, but they just taught me something about social media that I felt like a real clown when they told me this because it seemed so obvious. And when they showed it to me, I was like, I can't believe I haven't been doing this for 10 years. But it was the same thing. I was like, the first thing I said is, hey, thanks, because I guarantee this is going to get me more engagement and conversation. And it was something that I never even knew. And it was really simple when they taught it to me. So it's also understanding, you have to be also willing to learn, even when you're in these spots, right? Always be learning something every day, even if it's something that you wouldn't think you're going to use. It's another tool in your bag, right? Always be filling up your bag with different ideas, different tools to create something in the future.
Yeah, I love that. It's the mindset that we've never arrived. And there's always an opportunity to grow. And with that, anything is possible. And all things are possible, I really believe. Daryl, it's been great. We're going to be right back with you here in a moment, talking about our next topic. And we'll be talking about how AI can feel intimidating, but also approachable for leaders looking to improve their business. So stay with us, and we'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back in the Inspired Culture. Loving what you're watching? Don't miss a moment. of the Inspired Culture or any of your favorite Now Media TV shows, live or on demand, anytime, anywhere. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our full lineup of bilingual programming in both English and Spanish. Prefer to listen on the go? Catch the podcast version of the show right on the Now Media TV website at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and breaking news to lifestyle, culture, and everything in between, Now Media TV is streaming 24/7, ready whenever you are.
We're back with more on the Inspired Culture.
Welcome back, Daryl. Many leaders feel AI is intimidating, only for large corporations. Let's talk about how AI can be practical, manageable, and human-focused.
Wow, this is a big one. I mean, I think this might be the buzzword for 2025 for sure, is AI. I will tell you that I've spent the last 4 weeks getting certified on a couple different AI tools and the new GEO, which is the Generative Engine Optimization, which ties into AI. And I'm excited. But I'm excited that AI is here, but not to replace. And I think that's where we have to start. Everyone's looking at like AI as this intimidating thing because they're like, it's fast, it's encompassment, it's intrusive, and they don't know what to do with it. And they should be. They should have some concerns because there's 9 different versions, minimum, of what AI does or what people think it does. And at this point, I think there's 18 different tools, right, that you can use. And so where I think people really need to understand AI is what AI are you getting and what AI do you need for your store? So, you know, are you a store that just needs something like a ChatGPT, which is single language model, really a search index that does a little bit of formatting, but it's really just there to help you be a little bit more efficient, but it's not going to do your day-to-day stuff? Or do you need like a Claude or one of these, you know, agentic models where you want to build agents, where you need an actual officer in your store or your business that build all these formats so that it can start doing some of your pathways. So, you know, I think part of it is education. And then part of it is understanding, what do you actually need? Do you want it to start a conversation? Do you want it to make phone calls? Do you want it to, I just heard one that's like a human on a phone and it's all AI, and it was very scary because I did not know I was talking to AI until about 2 minutes in the conversation, and it was way too smooth. Like they never had a or an and or a but, and I was like, this can't be a human. No one talks this great. But I do think it's something that we can't ignore because it's coming. Well, I shouldn't say it's coming. It's been here since 1950. But now we're in this big movement of AI where, because of the computing power, we can actually start seeing some of its advantages. But I think we have to educate ourselves and really make sure we understand, where do we want to be? Don't jump into the everyone has to do AI mode, right? Don't compete with everyone. It's still your business. Yeah. You need to figure out for your business, where does it fit within your structure? If you're a facial person-to-person business, let's say like a retail clothing outlet, AI would really be a tool for like email campaigns for you, right? Or some kind of marketing. You're not going to want that in your in-store face-to-face, but if you're more of a dial-for-dollars type of business, okay, now you might be looking at an AI type of operation. So I think you have to just realize it's not here to replace us, and we shouldn't even think like that. It's how do we use it for where we're going or where we want to be?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a great perspective shift on what it can do and what it should do, and really what we need it to do, right? And then it's all about the customer experience on the other side. We can have all these great tools, and to your point earlier in our last episode, we could run efficiently and we could do all of these things, but the reality is, there's still an experience that everybody is expecting. And I think that if we're not careful, we could have the opposite impact if we don't utilize AI correctly in our businesses and misutilize the system to take away that personal experience that others may be getting, which you've touched on. So tell us a little bit, like, why do so many leaders feel overwhelmed when they hear about AI, even though they know it could help their business and possibly hurt it? But what's the overwhelming factor that you're seeing there, Daryl?
Well, I'm going to say two things. The first one is most people in, we'll say, leadership or management positions are older, you know, and I'm not going to say all of them, but we'll say a large sum of them are older. They're going to be Gen X or baby boomers that know what they're doing. They know the job. They learned it based on time and skill. And now AI comes in here and can do it. I mean, let's be real, 10 times faster. It can compute faster. I mean, we couldn't think as fast as this spits out answers. So the fear is, right, is that because we're a little bit older, is they're not educated to it. And now this creates another shift in the culture, is because they're not educated to it, is you don't see many companies investing. Now, I know they like to use this word expense. That's a terrible word. They don't like to invest in their people to give them ongoing education. Yeah. And so if you tell a 40-year-old male or female that's a director of something, hey, by the way, we're bringing in, you know, Conversica into our system, and it's this AI-driven system or Podium, and they're like, and this is, you got to learn this, and they don't know anything about it, they have nowhere to go but fear. They don't know it. Now they're uncertain. Now you've shaken their confidence. Now they're not confident in their job. Do they have a job? Are they being replaced? So you're immediately crashing this dynamic if you do have a culture with a replacement model, because you haven't had the right communication or education. Number two is we are immediately looking for a replacement model. We're going back to that old school variety culture that we didn't have in the 50s and 60s, maybe not even in the 70s. And then we started seeing it in the 80s. We definitely saw it in the 90s and then the 2000s. Is how do we replace somebody, a well-paid individual, for someone half as the money, because we want to save money or we want to make more profit, right? We're cutting to profit rather than investing to grow. And so now we're looking at AI as a replacement model for our people rather than a efficiency model for our people. And so we're kind of taking two of the worst things that can happen, is we're putting fear into the industry because we're not educating people. And then we're like, how do we make this where we don't need people? So we're going to have a disconnection. And I think if people just took a step back and realized, like, AI is a tool, that's all it is. Okay. It's just a tool. It's a great tool. It's probably one of the best tools we've seen come out. But we need to educate our people either by investing in them or have them go do it and then have them reimbursed, right? Make them pay for it and say they want it and then reimburse them once they've completed it, much like you see some programs. And then we need to realize we still need connection points. And I will share a quick story about this. Is I was talking to a dealer and they want to be all AI. They're AI in, like, they've dove in head, feet, everything first. And I said, okay, who's going to be doing the training, or what's going to happen when you deliver this experience online that is, like, so efficient? Chef's kiss. I mean, it's great. Then they walk into the store and they meet me and they're like, and I go, hey, man, what's up? And I'm like high-fiving them, because they've gotten this super polished experience online, but there's no connection point to when they actually do in-person business. And so there's always going to be this need for people, and we have not thought or developed a plan or process of how to make sure these connect. Right now, we're trying to treat them as two different things. And without making this connection, all we're doing is creating a dynamic, like you said, which I don't think it's a fear. I think it's a reality. And we're already seeing it happen, is where we are pushing customers out of our business model because we're trying to push an agenda of, like, AI is better for us. Is it better for the consumer? Which I will tell you, like I said in that last segment, consumers have already said they'd rather deal with people than deal with AI. And it's not saying they're not ready. They're not ready to fully be dealt with by AI. I think people are okay with, like, a text message here or the awful phone banking AI that we've been dealing with for 10 years that never routes us to the right spot. But they're not ready to be fully encompassed by a robotic system.
Certainly. Well, it's the easy answer for a lot of businesses is put in the technology and see what happens, because we know we could probably reduce headcount, and that headcount's going to make us more profitable. And that might be true short term. Long term, it might put you out of business. The reality is because you lost the experience. And what you're saying, you know, the focal point, I believe, with any technology, as you said, bringing them together in the business space is innovation and is the ability to rebrand and re-strategize to the current marketplace conditions of today. And the one thing that I've seen more than ever is people are buying experiences. They're paying for experience. And the product and everything else, but the experience has to be great. Look at all the shopping malls around the world. They're not the same, are they? Half of them have been taken down, and half of them are still standing, but they have an experience marketplace plugged in from laser tag, escape rooms, bowling, all the different things, right? What was a retailer with a massive shopping center has become an experience center. And that's what people are willing to invest and spend their money on. And so companies, those that you work with, you know, what I hear you saying is invest in that experience, utilizing the technology, but never lose focus of who your client is.
And I think that's the one thing that I think I'd love to leave people with is, and this one's going to take a lot. This is almost like, hey, let's jump off this cliff together type of thing is, in any business you're in, from auto dealerships to retail to even industrial, right? Just do a quick survey and don't send out like a survey monkey. Actually go talk to your people, right? Invest a little bit of time. We're talking a Scotia time. Go ask them, hey guys, if we were able to do this and we were to bring you a product better or faster, would you rather us do it with this or would you want to deal with people? Actually hear what your customer has to say. And that doesn't mean run your business based on opinion, but before you make a shift, you should probably get a tone of what your customer would react to, right? Have all the data, not just your opinion, right? Get some factual data behind the experience before you just shift your business. And it doesn't mean abandon AI either. I think you have to find that blend, but I think you need to figure out every industry or every sector is going to be different on how fast that's going to integrate into their sector.
Yeah, I love that. You know, the thing is slowing down to see the need and recognizing the gap. And to do things well, we have to be able to see. And that's the first step in this. And so meeting with your customers, understanding what they want, meeting with your people. Your people know more than we give them credit. And they actually know everything. Quite frankly, if you ask the right questions, you'll get the information that you need to be successful and pivot. It's taking the time to see your people, though, as you mentioned, Daryl, in the very beginning of us talking with one another. They're invaluable. They're invaluable assets if we engage with them appropriately and really invest into them, as you said. You know, and I love your investment strategy about how you lead people. I think that's really, really neat. We've got 2 minutes left. One last question on this. What's one easy first step any leader can take this week to start using AI without feeling overwhelmed or out of their depth?
So there is a lot. The one that most people would be familiar with is ChatGPT, which pretty much everyone's heard of. I would tell you spend the $20 to get the upgraded version just so that you can actually get all the features from it. Now, if you're looking to build something out, the first thing I would do is I'd go to Google. I would search what tools are there or what types of AI and then how many tools, because Claude or Gemini, something that has large language model, might be more suited for you. But to start, ChatGPT is going to be the kind of give you an idea of like how it indexes, how it searches, and just little things you can do that you don't do with Google or Bing or any other search engine.
Great. Well, thanks for the recommendation. I know the audience listening in today really appreciates your insights around AI and the confidence that you have for organizations to start looking at different ways to bring that into their businesses and marrying that with the people that they have in their organizations as well. So, Daryl, if leaders wanted to start experimenting with AI safely and effectively, where can they learn more about your strategies and tools?
So you can find me. I have a couple websites, smartwolfconsulting.com or autostreetsmarts.com. But it's probably easier for you guys to find me on social media. So if you go to Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, LinkedIn. Type in my name, Daryl Steed, so two R's, two L's, and then Steed like a horse. Or you can type in Smart Wolf Consulting and you'll find me. And if you send me a message, 5 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, I always answer my phone.
All right. Excellent. Well, there you have it. Up next, we'll discuss the delicate balance between work and family for leaders and how to stay connected to both worlds. So we'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back in the Inspired Culture. Loving what you're watching, don't miss a moment of the Inspired Culture or any of your favorite Now Media TV shows, live or on demand, anytime, anywhere. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our full lineup of bilingual programming in both English and Spanish. Prefer to listen on the go? Catch the podcast version of the show right on the Now Media TV website at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and breaking news to lifestyle, culture, and everything in between, Now Media TV is streaming 24/7, ready whenever you are.
We're back with more on the Inspired Culture.
Welcome back to the Inspired Culture. Daryl, balancing work and family often feels impossible for leaders. Let's talk about how to navigate these competing priorities without losing sight of what matters most. Today, we're going to be talking about the problem facing many in the audience is that balancing work and family feels impossible, making it seem like success in one area comes at the expense of another.
Well, I can 100% agree that that is a feeling and pretty much how most people live their life. I did it from 21 till 36. I lived that life and, you know, then it, I don't know if it comes later for some, earlier for other, but you kind of get that aha moment of realizing your career and business is great, but your family has to have just as much, if not more, value to you. And what I found is with most people now being a coach and a consultant and having that balance, so fortunate for me, I now have that, is the people in your business, when they don't have that balance, typically they're not going to run at 100% for you. And not because they don't want to, is there's a distraction. They're always thinking about something. They're always like, there's a prioritization issue of like, where should they be? If they miss an event with their kids or they never go on vacation or they can't, you create a dynamic to where they start getting burnt out. And so that is something in way of all business. I am a huge component. One might even say a thorn in your side of all the clients I work with of you need to have that balance for all your people, because that's how we're going to grow a team that wants to go to war, that wants to work for you. And when they're here with vigor, because they know they have that balance. They know they can, if something happens, family first allows for business to be a priority.
I love that. So many leaders feel constant guilt, right? That they're winning at work and they're losing at home or vice versa. You know, there's this like thing, we need to be committed. We need to provide for our family. I think men and women both wear that hat. And then we justify, right? Well, you know, if I'm working 55, 60 hours a week, it's because I'm going to support my family and put them in the best position possible, but really not recognizing that the best position includes you relationally, right? In that value aspect of it, saying the relational status of my family is far more important than the financial status. But a lot of people put the financial status first, which is then, you know, sacrificing time away. So what do you think about that? What is your perspective on that?
Well, I will tell you firsthand, and this is one that I like talking about because it's where one of my biggest learning things happened in life. Like for me, like it was a lesson that it didn't come easy, and it definitely was not fun when I learned it, is I was making just over $500,000 a year. I mean, I was on the gravy train with biscuit wheels. Life was great. I'm providing for my family, but I was working that 60 to 70 hour week 6 days a week, 12 hours a day type of thing, and seeing my family for a half hour a night, one day off, and that one day off was, you know, and I made a decision, and I left this job, and people thought I was out of my skull for leaving this job, because mind you, I'm 35. I've hit it. I've hit the pinnacle of where I wanted to be. And it was because it was either my job or my marriage. And my marriage ended up not working out. And the reason why is because, like you said, everyone thinks that when you have this money, that's going to take care of everything. And then we had money. Money was not an issue. Whatever we wanted to spend, wherever we wanted to go. But we could never go anywhere because I was working. And my kids, like, it was, my whole dream was to be a dad. And I was abandoning that as well because I was trying to provide. And so I always tell people, understand that we always want more. And it's okay to want more, and it's okay to strive for more. But we have to understand what more gives and gets.
Well, what is more? And so, right? What really is more? Yeah, defining what more is, right?
Yeah, part of that. And then part of it is, like, what do you have to give up to get more in your job? And what do you have to give up to get more in your family? And I will tell you now, I don't make anywhere close to $500,000 a year now. And people will tell you I'm much happier, probably easier to be around because I'm not as stressed. I'm in better health. I work out every day. I used to look like I ate me, but I had lots of money, so it was okay. And I just tell people, I'm like, when you have that balance and you can come home and be part of that family and you can go see sporting events or you can go on a trip with your wife or girlfriend, whatever it may be, you get something internally that allows you to take on the challenges of your job. But when you start missing those pieces, people don't realize it, but it starts almost taking pieces of you every day, because when then you have these challenges or these stressors or these deadlines, you don't have these other good things to fall back on. So you have to really get to know yourself and realize, is money everything, because money's not, is if your family was gone tomorrow, would you be the same person? And anyone that can say yes to that, then maybe it is your career, and then that's where you've got to be, but then you're risking that. For me, it was, and for most people I talk to, is their family is their drive. Mm. Their family is what keeps them going. And so if that's your drive, your heart, your engine, well, then you got to put the focus there and understanding. You might take a little haircut on the money side or on the career, but you have a complete life rather than an incomplete money-focused life, right? So you have to kind of decide what that is for you.
Yeah, Daryl, I like that. You know, we talked about investing earlier. Your family's an investment, just like everything else is. And, you know, it's not a transaction to get married and get a family and be like, okay, I've got my family, now I can go do my other things, right? You know, like, I've gotten that taken care of. Marriage was the finish line, wasn't the starting line, right? And really, marriage is the starting line. And we never finish, right? We never finish. And family never finishes either, right? Every child born into the family is a new starting line. And then it's what we do from that point forward and how we invest into them. And so it's an investment. And, you know, I tell my wife this all the time. She's my purpose. My family's my purpose. I don't, you know, it's not something else that's part of, you know, you're part of my purpose. I have three purposes in life. They're one. And I know that, right? And Daryl, it sounds like you know yours too. And I think the thing is that knowing that gives you the ability then to focus and invest where it is required and on a daily basis in that space. I love that you share that. Is there any words of wisdom that you can give those listening in and watching in today about family, about work? You know, we talked about the financial haircut if you invest in your family. We talked about, you know, if you invest in your career, the loss that can happen, you know, even losing your family for how it was designed to begin with. I mean, what could you offer as insights to those listening and watching in today?
Yeah, let's say this in the realest way we can. And this is how I looked at it. And then and how I have a coach that obviously explained this to me. You get a job and you found it. It's the job you're making. And let's say crazy money. You're making $1 million a year. You, I mean, you're just, everything's perfect. How many failures are you willing to have in your family life to have the one success in your job? And when you lose, who fails, right? So when I looked at it, it's like, okay, I spent all this time growing in my career and ran over every obstacle I had to that got in my way. And then when you look back at it, and I still have my kids, right? And yes, my ex-wife, we still have a good relationship. We talk, but it didn't work. You have to now live with the fact that you sacrificed that because you wanted to get where your career is. So when people think like, oh, I'm successful, are you? Because you had to fail at something in order to get to where you were at. Because without failure, you have no success, and we can spin it any way we want. I got to a point in my life, I was no longer going to tolerate failure in my family life for my business life. Because if it made me an extra $100,000 a year, great. So I have this money. But if I don't have time to spend it and I don't have time to invest it in my family, or I don't have time to invest in them, my fear, which I think a lot of people probably have this in the back of their mind, is I have kids. I have three boys. Was when they get old enough to do what they want, and I have one that's an adult and then two younger ones, is I want them to look at me and say that, like, I had a great dad, not a dad that worked really hard. I want them to say I had a dad that was there, came and saw my sports, was there, helped me coach my sports. I want them to be like, they remember me being part of their life, not someone that paid for their life. And so I just always challenge everyone to say, if you have kids or you have a relationship, even if you just have a wife, right, and you don't have kids yet, do you want to be, when you get older, when you reflect on memories or when you reflect on the life you lived, do you want to be part of it or just someone that provided it? And that's how simple it is do you want to be part of something or do you just want to be the person that provided it?
Yeah, Daryl, I really like that a lot, because we can be a transactional family member, or we can be an intentional one. And what you described is one of intention, you know, and that's really, really important. The whole intentionality piece of how we invest into those relationships and how we see our families, our wives, husbands, you know, our spouses, significant others, and our children grow. And we've either played a role in it or we haven't. And we all know who we are and those that have and have not. And then the other thing I'd add to everything that you've said so eloquently is that we get to decide. And my suggestion is we don't look at past experiences, but we look forward to the vision that we see, and we really invest into thinking about of who am I going to be as a husband or a wife? Who am I going to be as a father or a mother? And start working at that each and every day to be the best version of ourselves and not a carbon copy of something we've already seen, because that's not who we are and who we're made to be. I really like that. Well, Daryl, we're going to come right back. Thank you for your incredible insights. And we'll have a final segment with you and how you'll explain how customer acquisitions can feel random and how to turn those into great opportunities.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back in the Inspired Culture. Loving what you're watching? Don't miss a moment of the Inspired Culture or any of your favorite Now Media TV shows, live or on demand, anytime, anywhere. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our full lineup of bilingual programming in both English and Spanish. Prefer to listen on the go? Catch the podcast version of the show right on the Now Media TV website at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and breaking news to lifestyle, culture, and everything in between, Now Media TV is streaming 24/7, ready whenever you are.
We're back with more on the Inspired Culture.
Welcome back. Daryl, in this final segment, many leaders feel acquiring new customers is left to luck. Let's discuss how strategy can turn chance into consistent growth. Today, our topic is the problem facing many in the audience is that customer acquisition feels random and based on luck, often making success seem out of their control.
I can see how some people think that. That's for sure. I'm going to kind of lay in one area on this because I think we have more control than we think we do. And it's in what we used to call social media, right? Now I think it's being redefined as search media. And the reason I say that is your Facebook, your Instagram, your TikTok, if you're still on Snapchat, YouTube, all these funnels. A study just came out that it's just under, for the United States, 5 hours a day that people are on social media apps, which I don't even know what they do with the rest of their workday. So, but 5 hours a day they're on social media apps, one of those five apps. This isn't making phone calls. This isn't in online. This is on social apps. So when we say it's just luck, yeah, it is just luck. They're lucky you're not paying attention to your business. Because if you don't live where the customer's at, if you are no longer meeting them where they're at, so let's just take like something like billboards, right? I'm not going to say billboards work or don't work, but they're not trackable, right? You throw all this money up on a billboard, and then you're on the hope plan. I hope they see it. I hope they react. I hope they come in. So, but no one's driving around going, man, did you see that billboard? But they're on social media, and that's where almost all the businesses do not have someone in their store or a aggressive approach to how they're going to engage their customers. Now, I'm not promoting that you get on social media today and decide to just bombard social media with all kinds of ads and sales stuff. You have to have a unique voice, knowing your people, knowing your brand, creating an experience much like a Nordstrom's, a Dillard's, NFL, like when you go to a game, it's an experience, right? And they've never got more for tickets than they do today, right? And it's all based on social and on-demand local TV. And that's the thing is if we want more customers, we need to be where they're at. We need to create a dynamic brand that they want to come find. So if they search, let's just use like a Jiffy Lube, right? If you don't, they say, okay, I want to go get my oil change. And then they go look. And some people and most people are doing search on Facebook. They're doing search in TikTok. They're doing search. If you don't have that presence there, then they go to the whoever they see. Or they'll type in the search bar, oil change in a social media, and it'll see what it brings up. So we have to ask ourselves, are we struggling to get customer acquisition because it's hard or it's not as easy anymore? Or are we struggling because our business model is 25 years old and we haven't adapted to where consumers actually engage now?
So what do you think about that? Because that's a lot. I love what you just shared, you know, a relevant business model to one that's 25 years old. Let's talk about the reality of that. You know, from your experience, how many customers, how many clients do you have that you help that you feel are like on an older business model? And what's a transformation strategy from an old model to a new model?
Of the clients I have now, I would say 90% of them have a older dynamic for their business model. And that's typically why they reach out to me, because the older model is slowly degrading and is no longer working at the level it used to, right? It's taken enough years, but it's now going the other way. And the first conversation I have is, and it's never an easy one, we'll even say it's a spirited conversation. I won't say we argue, but it's spirited. And it's, when you say you want to change or grow, what does that look like to you? And I make them identify what growth is. So then we can have a conversation of, okay, if that's what growth looks like to you, whatever they say, it doesn't matter, right? Because it's their plan. How do you want to get there? And when they say, I don't know, or that's what we need to understand, is we need to understand that if we don't know how to get there, then it makes us immediately open to suggestion or ideas together. Let's create them together to come up with a plan. Not saying that every plan is going to work. It might take multiple versions of a plan, but we have to start somewhere. And I think sometimes we have this adage of like, well, that's just how we've always done it. That's what's always worked for me. That's what I hear in the auto industry all the time. Well, we've been doing it this way for 50 years. That's what's always worked. Obviously not. Because if it's what's always worked, we wouldn't be having a conversation. But when we look at that, is it's not as hard as people think to communicate and engage with people. We're just doing it in a different way. Back in the day, it was newspaper. Then it was telephone. And then we got to text, which I'm kind of in and out on text because there's no real connection there and there's a lot of misinterpretation. Then we have video. Now we have social media. We're still communicating similar messaging. We just have to figure out how to bring it to the audience where they're at today so that we can start the conversation. And I think that's the core of this. To get more customers, we have to create more conversations. And in order to create more conversations, we have to find out different ways to start conversations. We're depending on how we always used to do something rather than if we're seeing that drop down, we need to create something new or attempt a couple different things and see which one starts something new for us. And it doesn't have to be a one-way option. You can do lots of different things, but saying this is what we've always done isn't one of them.
Yeah. How hard is it to shift a leader, its mindset, and a business owner from this is how we've always done it to a new direction?
Easier than people would think if you have the right conversation. If you just say, hey, man, if you use the word I'm about to use, this conversation is going to go very bad very quickly. Hey, man, I know that you're struggling a little bit. What we need to do is change what you're doing. If you use that C word, yeah, nothing good happens. Change is scary. It's hard. It's uncomfortable. When you say, okay, hey, look, we know things aren't going the way you want. I think with a couple of things that we just need to adapt or we need to evolve into a newer dynamic, we have to change our word choice. Or we need to ask them for a plan or we need to ask them for permission, right? Some people are afraid. They have fear of losing, fear of winning, right? Because they don't know what it looks like. But when you ask them for permission, and then you also have to have a conversation in a way with clients and your customers of when this happens, like, is it okay if we do this? Is it, and let them know you're going to be there so that they understand you're in it with them. They're not alone. I think a lot of people are resistant to change. If you're a GM of a store or an owner of a store and you're like, we're going to change something. We're going to evolve. We're going to get into the next evolution of something. They feel they have to do it on their own and they've got to get everyone behind them rather than having a conversation and asking for buy-in. Asking for permission to make this change and letting people know so that when people grant that, because most people will, most people want to do better. They want to get better. Is now you're not alone and you're doing it as a team. Taking on the world by yourself is never going to be what you think it is, right? You know, what does they say? Many hands make light work. Okay. Well, you can't pick up the world by yourself.
No. Well, and without buy-in, you know, we're not going nothing. Anywhere, right? With that. And so I think that's a really great point you make there and making sure we have the buy-in, but we only get that by asking for permission.
But I think a lot of people do find themselves vulnerable of like, well, I'm the boss. I'm the owner. I don't need to ask them. Well, you do.
Mm-hmm.
Because the moment you change the dynamic or you change what their job's going to be. So I go in and I'll do service drive acquisition. So we're going to change everything about their service drive. Not in what they do. You're going to come and get an oil change and get your car fixed. But we're going to change how the customer interaction looks like. And it takes everybody. Can't just be one person. We do need to go ask them for permission. Because if they don't want to do that, now we have a decision. Do we keep them on the team or do we have to move on? Because if we're going to adapt, if we're going to evolve and we don't have buy-in, we're going to have disconnection. We're going to have problems. So, but if I ask them, I'm giving them a choice. When you tell them, you give them no choice. And as we all learned as kids, when you tell me no, I'm probably going to do it anyway. If you ask me, I have a better chance of getting buy-in or getting agreement based on permission rather than instruction.
Well, and instruction doesn't provide perspective, right? And perspective means that I get a say, and at least I get to see, and I get to think about it. But a lot of people don't like being told. And so the telling of being told equals usually not a great outcome ever. Bringing them in to the decision-making process and allowing them to be part of the vision creates a whole different dynamic, which, by the way, as a leader, holistically, you'd want that, right? Because I don't have all the answers, and I'm okay to say that. But my team does. And if I lean on them, they're going to be bought in because it's their idea.
But that's part of bringing our people back, as we've been talking about today, is in order to make a person feel valuable, you have to make them or have them understand that they're irreplaceable. And so if you're never talking to them, you're never asking them, you're never including them, they're never going to feel valuable. They're going to feel like they do a job. And the moment that you're vulnerable enough to be a leader, the true sense of a leader, not a manager, and say, I need to know how to inspire, motivate, and engage people. I don't need to have the answer to everything. That's where you start asking and you start getting advice and you start now your people start to feel valuable. They're like, man, I'm valuable to this organization, which in turns will make them feel irreplaceable. Now, as long as your people don't take that as kindness for weakness, you're in good shape, but that's part of being a leader too, is the moment we decide to be vulnerable and let our people know without them, there is no us and vice versa. Now it becomes a true construct of a team and we can do very big things and very quickly.
That is so true, Daryl. One thing, we got a couple of minutes left. You know, if you could share with the audience, because we're on the topic of leadership and people, which I think both of us can agree, they are the DNA, the most valuable aspect of any one organization. You know, both holistically, from their family life to their professional life, relationally. You know, if there was one piece of advice you could leave all of our listeners and those tuning in on TV, what would it be? And this could be big picture, but what could it be?
So just in culture and life is take a moment and write down where you are right now in your business, in your life, in your family, and where you want to be. And then take 5 minutes and think about it before you move forward. And then now go write down after you've got those things and say, where do you want to go and what is it going to take? And have that moment of clarification of, you know, okay, here's where I am, here's where I want to go, and here's the next piece, and this is the most important part. Who do you need to be part of this to get to where you're going? And this is where it gets interesting, and this is what I've done for myself. It's what my coach teaches me. It's what I teach to other people. Once you write down to who you need, I need my wife, I need my kids, I need this person, do they know that? And if they don't, you need to make that a focus of letting people know that you need them, that they're part of your success and that you want to be part of theirs. Make yourself reciprocal, as equally vulnerable as understanding, so that people know, like, hey, guys, this is where I want to be. I'm a GM now. I want to own a store. The only way I get there is with, hey, I need you. I need you. I need you. And as much as I need you guys to tell me what you need from me to get you to where you want to go. Start being a servant leader, but you still need to write down where you're at, where you want to go, and who's needed. Because if you don't have a clear vision, then you're just on the hope plan, right? You're hoping it happens rather than making the plan.
Oh, that's great. I really like that a lot. You know, for all the listeners and the viewers out there, have a plan. Write it out. You know, as Daryl just shared, take the time to reflect on it. And make sure that you're checking in with it all of the time. Because the reality is, to Daryl's point, we don't have a plan. We're on the hope plan. And it's not bad to have hope, but we need to have hope with the vision and know exactly where that hope's taking us. So Daryl,
so the people know, guys, hope is just a wish without a plan. So you need hope, but you needed a plan, so it's no longer a wish.
Yes. That's right. And the opportunities will come when you're executing that and you're investing in those around you. So, Daryl, tell us, where can viewers go to learn more about your consulting services and continue growing their business strategically?
You can come to either website, smartwolfconsulting.com or autostreetsmarts.com, or find me on social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. You either type in my name, Daryl Steed, or Smart Wolf Consulting. You'll find me on one of those mediums, my phone number, contact me, and I will always be available 5 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 7 days a week.
Awesome, Daryl. Well, thank you for sharing your insights today. We've explored the human side of processes, practical AI strategies, balancing work and family, and how to acquire customers with tension with intention and repeatable success. To our viewers, remember, culture is created by the choices you make every day, how you treat people, use technology, and plan for growth. Apply these lessons and watch your business thrive without sacrificing the human touch. I'm Eric Himes, and that wraps up this episode of The Inspired Culture. Stay inspired, stay strategic, and keep building a culture that works for both people and performance.